Welcome to the Frontier Banter Podcast.
All right, hey, good morning, everybody. My name is Colonel Derek Baird. I am the U.S. Army Garrison Fort Sill Commander. That is a mouthful for everybody out there. And with me is...
Command Sergeant Major William Bill Pearson, the Fort Sill Garrison CSM.
All right, so this is our inaugural podcast, I think, Bill, as we... Or Sergeant Major, make this very, very, very professional. Command Sergeant Major Bill Pearson, or Bill Beast Mode Pearson.
Pinkies up, pinkies up.
Pinkies up, for sure, as we do here at Fort Sill, Oklahoma. And so we want to do a monthly podcast, I think. What are the things we want to talk about here in the future?
I think, you know, basic leadership stuff that we've experienced throughout our multiple decades of time in the Army. And then, you know, maybe... You know, upcoming garrison stuff or stuff we found that's different leading in a garrison than in the regular Army.
Yeah, right. And so, I mean, I've been in the Army for a long time, 27 years-ish.
So old.
I know, so old. Old fuddy-duddies. Hey, so what I'm going to ask you, Sergeant Major, to start us off with is... It's not always appealing, it seems, the officer corps and the non-commissioned officer corps to be a part of the garrison command team. So I'd be interested in your thoughts when you found out. And if you don't mind afterwards, I'll probably answer my own question.
It was mixed emotions. I was sitting in a FA Brigade CSM slot. So I was kind of happy where I was, minus the issues that were going on at the time. Army-wise, and then I was happy because I was coming to the fire, you know, the home of the field artillery. You know, if I want to be a garrison CSM, it's the home of the field artillery.
Yeah, right.
So if I would have got picked up for a garrison somewhere else, I don't know if I would have had the same, you know, motivation to come take the job.
Yeah.
I mean, I want to keep trucking in the Army, but, you know, for the longest time, you know, garrison's had that allure of being a career ender, and, you know, no one wants to do a garrison. But I think a lot of that has changed, especially with the generals of the world, because starting to realize that garrison CSMs and commanders know how installations run, which is a whole new universe. And as you know, when you take over, your first 90 days is, it's like you're learning a completely different language of acronyms. And some of them are the same acronym from the regular Army, like ISR. You're like, oh, intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance. Like, no, installation status report. You're like, what?
Yeah, right.
So
no, I'm with you.
So it's learning a new language, and then, but yeah, it actually is a really fun job to have, and it's not the dead end job you thought it would be.
Well, it keeps you on your toes every day. So it's a lot different. You're dealing with different challenges, and you know, fun fact, I think one of the things coming into here is for me, I'm with you. Like, you know, one. For anybody out there, having the opportunity to be a commander or a command sergeant major at any level is a wonderful opportunity.
Yes.
That is point blank the most, I think, the best thing, the most important thing. Of course, you know, I think we're both force comm guys for a long time, you know, done a lot of force comm stuff. We speak that language and we understand that part of the Army. But, you know, last year, before taking this job, I was the assistant FA commandant. I'd never been in TRADOC before, except for, you know, school. And so I know the force comm language, and then I had to learn the TRADOC language. And then a year later, I had to learn the MCOM language, the Installation Management Command language. And I'll tell you, vastly different languages. like you said, like ISR, Installation Status Report, you know, and all these other things. And some of these, it's just a fascinating transition from force comm to TRADOC to Installation Management Command. But I'm with you. Like, a lot of things, you know, it's just a career end, or this. You know, great. If it is, it is. If it isn't, it isn't. You know, love the one you're with and just have that energy to do it. And that's what I tell folks out there is it has been an amazing run so far. I guess for you, it's close to a year. For me, it's about four.
Just hit a year.
Yeah, right. And so me... like 4 months and we'll call it 5 days, right? You know, and so 4 months. And I think the most important part of that is just jumping in feet first and having the passion to continue to serve and be a command team. And I think that's the most important part. That's what I let folks out there listening, like, wherever you're at, be the best person you can be and the best leader you can be and do well by your soldiers. And for us, not just the soldiers, but civilians. And So on that note, I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on, because again, one of these things people talk like, well, you know, going from green suiters or just working with 90-something percent civilians, it's just going to be different. It's harder. It's this, it's that. I'm not sure that's true. I want to hear from you first if you're interested. I'd like to kind of get your perspective on that.
Yeah, so it's kind of two-pronged because I'm a sergeant major, and I'll get to that in a minute. So when you come to
when
the
you stand there and you say that, do you have your hands on your hips and go, "You, everybody out there, I am a sergeant major.
I am a sergeant major." No, so it's one, I think leadership is leadership, whether it's green suiters or civilian. It's the same.
Yeah.
Right? It's learning how to work with people and gain buy-in. That's leadership. And then, you know, you still got the coach, teach, mentoring, because we do have some green suiters. And even the younger GSs still need that mentorship and leadership. As a sergeant major coming into a garrison, it gets a little tricky. And when I say what I'm about to say, I don't mean it happens in droves. It's onesies and twosies. The issues a garrison sergeant major comes into, sometimes you're giving direction to a GS employee who might have retired as a colonel a few years ago. So they don't like hearing a sergeant major tell them to do things because, hey, I was a, and I've heard it before, hey, you know, I'm a retired colonel. You can't tell me to do it. I'm like, I can. And now you're Mr. or whatever. Or
all right.
So there's a little bit of, and like I said, that happens in onesies. It's very rare.
Yeah.
But when it comes to leading civilians versus green suiters, I think sometimes maybe our frankness has to be a little bit different. We have to maybe watch our words a little differently. But at the end of the day, leadership is learning how each person likes to be led or wants to be led. And it's all the same in the end, whether it's green suit or civilian.
No, I'm with you. I think, fun fact, we're all people, right? Mm-hmm. And we do people things. And by that, kind of like to your point, you just treat people the way you want to be treated. Be the leader you wanted your leaders to be, that kind of thing. And, you know, we kind of talk about that quite a bit, whether it's with green suiters or civilian workforce, which absolutely all of them are amazing, if you ask me, like you were saying. And I think, you know, that aside, the real difference is it's just a process, you know. And so, you know, there's a different process on how we do the reward system, the discipline system, but really some of it's, you know, one thing I you know, the PD, the professional description or whatever, again, like, you know, not point detonating, but
the PDSs.
Yeah. And all, you know, and so, so you got to know what that looks like and who can do what, you know. A lot of times the green suiters do this and, well, it's not my job description. Doesn't matter. Right. Yeah. You know, and so for us, you know, you just got to learn the process and what that looks like. And I think after 4 months, I don't have it all down, not by any stretch of the imagination. No. But I think just, you know, having that wherewithal to understand what that looks like, it helps to understand the process. And then through that, how we manage talent across the board, whether civilian or green suitor. And I think that has been beneficial. And quite frankly, having you here for a year before me getting here has been super beneficial. Also, you're my neighbor across the street and our dogs hang out.
Yeah, and then you being the assistant FA commandant, being here and already having a lot of established relationships, I think really helped as well.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I think if we would have came in at the same time, oh, man. I mean, that's yeah. two people trying to learn a process and learn a different language simultaneously would have been rough.
Can be detrimental.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think having one of us here for a year really helps guide the other one.
Right. And then, like you said, like it was really great to be here for a year. And I think, and you're probably the best person to answer this, but I think, at least in my perspective, in my mind, I really try to take a back burner all of these things. Like, wait, there was no, like, I'm going to be the next blah, blah, blah. Like, try not to do that. You don't want to step on my predecessor, Jim P. If you're out there, Jim, listen to us. God bless you, bro. You left me with a really great organization, so I really appreciate that. It's been an amazing opportunity to follow in your footsteps with this great team. And but I think having that opportunity to see the cultures, you look at like people, policy and process, culture, you know, things that we focus on, that for sure was helpful. And then, Yeah, it does help having a good NCO, senior non-commissioned officer that I can rely on. And, you know, we talk about empowering NCOs. I'm not a fan of that statement because your non-commissioned officers are already empowered with the AR-600-20, doctrine, regulations, culture, you name it. And I think really at the end of the day is under the trust that we have to ensure that decisions are made in a timely manner and that we can execute what we want to do as a command team in the future.
Well, yeah, and I think it's one thing we do well together is, hey, you are the up and out guy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we need the garrison commander thinking about stuff that he's never even going to see happen. Hey, I'm worried about 2030, 2040. I'll do all the day-to-day wackiness that happens in a garrison. We can fill 10 more episodes.
We're going to get to the wackiness here in a little while. So hey, don't worry there, listeners. We are going to get to some great stories.
We could just do, you know, drive around with Sergeant Major Pearson. That's a podcast in itself. But I think it's important that we give each other our own white space to be able to do, because there's so much stuff that needs to get done in a garrison that you have to have trust in each other. Like, hey, don't worry, I'll handle these five things, so you can worry about these four things. Because if you're all just, you know, the CG put it perfectly. You say, hey, when I see you, the commander, and the deputy at the same time in all the meetings, I wonder what's not happening. Because there's just so much stuff that has to happen that we have to, you know, spread across the battlefield to make sure our garrison runs. And that's the other thing that I forgot to mention earlier. For those who get picked to take a garrison, what you realize is if you do a brigade, sergeant major time, even battalion time, you're slowly moving further away from soldiers because you're doing all the bigger picture things. At a garrison, you realize you have a bigger effect on soldiers and families than in any other position you've ever had before.
Yeah, quality of life, right? Yeah,
and quality of life, the MWR stuff, making sure there's lots of stuff for people to do.
Army community service. I mean, you are really big, and like you're the Army emergency relief guy. Like, I mean, we have a great Army emergency relief team. Absolutely. Don't get me wrong, but I mean, you're the decision maker on a lot of these, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's vastly important for our families here.
Well, that and I'll say it, and I'm probably a little biased, so I'm trying to not be biased, but we easily have one of the best MWRs in the United States Army.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, our boss has been recognized. The stuff, you know, Sarah Gersper and Ethan Briner do for this installation is phenomenal.
I mean, you want to talk about we just came back from AUSA for...
one large installation for largest AER donations,
2 years in a running. Yeah. 2 years running.
Our team is just absolutely killing it.
Yeah, and we got a great, you know, not to interrupt, but you know what I think is interesting is we've been around the block, and I'll say this from my perspective is that the Lawton Fort Sill community, I would say without a doubt, is the most tight knit, Civ Mil community Army installation partnership I have seen in 27 plus years in the Army. That includes my enlisted time and officer time. Like, that is Fort Sill was here in 1869. Someone fact check me on that. I think it's 1869, right? And then Lawton 1920s or maybe teens. I can't remember off the top of my head. I'm terrible at this. Sorry, Lawton. I'm terrible. I'm not a history major by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, we're like the big brother. Yeah. But that we would not be where we are today, I think, with – and Lawton's for sure, if we didn't have this really great partnership. And last time I was here, by any stretch of the imagination, was finishing up officer basic course, BOLIC, I guess, basic officer leader course now, but it was OBC then, in 2001. So 20 plus years later, it's changed in an absolutely phenomenal way. And it's that partnership and that community partnership that we've got with Lawton and the surrounding communities as well.
I mean, yeah, I would argue we're probably one of the few installations that do basic training where at every single basic training graduation, you're going to see Frontier friends, local city council people.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the mayor.
Oh, yeah.
You know, all those people come and support almost every event, every golf tournament. I mean, everything we do is always joint. And You know, you hear the mayor all the time and the CG as well, but it's never Lawton, it's never Fort Sill, it's Lawton, Fort Sill.
Right.
And that's huge.
That's right. You know, and it's interesting you say it. You know, it's one good thing about, you know, again, as we go from like a Forces Command and a TRADOC to the Installation Management Command and IMCOM is really, you know, taking the senior commander's priority, you know, Major General Brooks here at the Fire Center of Excellence in Fort Sill, and nesting those priorities with Installation Management Command and, you know, and trying to figure out what that looks like. And then what I thought was really great coming into here is, you know, you kind of mentioned, we really want to look at the garrison of the future. Like, what does that look like? And, you know, I mean, we got some folks here in the room doing some phenomenal work with us, you know, setting us up here. And I really appreciate our Fire Center of Excellence PAO team for doing this with us, and our team here with Chris Gardner and our PAO, Christine Gardner, I should say. I think one of our I got fact checked. I love it. Yes, I was right. Fort Sill, 1869. Lawton, you're 1901. I was 20 years too late. I love it. I love it. Thanks, Chris. You are the bee's knees for sure. This is great. We got to make sure we're on point. I love it. But yeah, so, you know, we are looking at that garrison of the future. And so for, I think one of the things that I wanted to do when I got here was if you're going to be a garrison team, what are the things that you want to do? Or you want to know what your garrison commander or the senior commander wants to do. And then what is the IMCOM, like, where are we going? But we sat down before I took over. And I was like, there's like some initiatives that I personally wanted to do. Not for personal gain, for sure, but for to see the growth. Because, again, I had been here in 20-plus years, and I wanted to see us move forward. You know, one of those things was that we just did a sort of garrison of the future, you know, we'll call it a little, you know, vision quest kind of thing. We were looking out to 2040 and beyond, and how do we get there? What do we do now in transformation and contact through deliberate transformation, through concept-driven transformation? How do we set conditions now to get us to 2040. And, you know, we're looking at installation readiness, we're looking at quality of life, we're looking at power projection, we're looking at
energy resilience,
independence, cyber resilience. Yeah. So all through our four lines of effort there, and, you know, and so we're trying to figure all this out and nesting it all. And I think we had a great opportunity to do that earlier this month. And it was really great with all the directors and the green suitors and bringing in young leaders. So I thought that was really great. And then, you know, some of the initiatives, like we're looking at doggy daycare coming on post. Mm-hmm. It's seafood market. I cannot wait because it's a Virginia Beach kid. And we're, you know, it's happening, by the way, for everybody in the room. Seafood market, end of January. It's going to start every quarter because this guy likes to eat seafood. But I've had a lot of feedback from, we've asked a sort of an impromptu survey with just rando people walking around. Like, what do y'all think about seafood here? And through that, just walking around the commissary and talking to our DECA folks, they thought it was also a great idea. And so it's going to be a reality. And there's other things as we look at, you know, drone policy. How do we influence drone policy through FAA to get us to do, you know, train as we fight? You know, how do we do some of these things to help out the counter UAS folks as we look at train as we fight? Mm-hmm. You know, how do we get and we talk about installation readiness, power projection. That's where garrisons kind of make their money, not just sitting back talking about how much money can we make. That's great because we want to do that to help the community. But how do you help the senior commander in their mission? That's, I think, where we're looking at through our focus areas. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I think, you know, allowing you to really spend a lot of time on that.
What you're saying is my head's in the clouds.
I mean, yeah, but it's a good place to be. You know, and then, you know, I try to concentrate on the quality of life stuff at the lowest level, which is hard because there's just so much. And, you know, which is interesting because, you know, you come up in the Army and you're always like, you know, the privatized housing people are the devil incarnate, right?
Yeah.
Then you become a garrison and you see the other side of the story where, you know, hey, there's some dirty birds out there in our formation. And like you said earlier, later on, we can talk. I have been in homes.
Oh, you've opened it up. You've opened it up. All right. So Bill, what I know you've got several, cause it's fun when you talk about this. This is great. What is your favorite Dirty House story.
I'll give you my top two. Now, they're my favorite. It's certainly not Corby's because it cost them thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
One, we had, there was a house that had, I think it was five, it might have been two, I can't remember, of those giant cockatiel birds that, you know, like the size of cats.
Yeah.
No cage. So they were just flying around the house, defecating on everything. Dishes, countertops, floors, couches, and they were they even, you know, the little rubber strip that goes around a freezer that helps it close. They'd eaten through that and it would just crawl into the freezer and hang out, was eating the inside of the freezer. I mean, just decimated this house.
Oh my gracious.
So you walk in and you're like, what? No, I used to get mad when I left IPCS and one of the housing partners charged me for my blinds that, you know, maybe my dog, because you met my dog, Happy, is a lunatic.
She's like maybe a spider monkey hopped up on Mountain Dew.
And now these people are looking at, you know, $30,000 in damages. And another one, probably my favorite, someone had a giant hog.
This by far is my favorite.
No one saw him because it never went outside. It just lived in the house. And it probably ate at least 2 feet worth of drywall down an entire hallway.
And not like a Charlotte's Web type of pig. Yeah, not like a nice pig. But like
something like the pigs they talked about in Snatch. You know what I mean? Like a giant hog. And there was so much animal urine in the main bedroom that had leaked through the flooring, the carpet, the subflooring. It was coming through the ceiling of the living room on the bottom floor.
Gracious.
So when you see that side of the story, it gives you an entirely different perspective. And people don't realize, like, when I see that, you're thinking, oh, my God, you know, this is a dirty house. What do you do with that? But in, as a Garrison CSM's head, you're like, I got to get leadership involved. We're going to have to get ACS involved. You know, do they have kids?
Yeah.
Do we have to get FAP involved?
There's a support structure
there's a whole slew of things that have to get involved. Yeah, that, yeah. You know, and a lot of these young first sergeants, like I certainly didn't know. And if you talk to any, I think on your side, if you talk to any Garrison command team, if we would have known this stuff when we were a young captain or first sergeant, we
would have been command teams,
or even battalion, we would have been far better commanders, first sergeants, sergeant majors.
I agree 100%.
We just didn't know what we didn't know at the time.
Yeah,
you know, and that's why I try to tell people here at our commander first sergeant course is, if you're a young captain or a first sergeant, and Monica Ulibarri isn't your best friend, and you haven't gone face to face and talked to her at least once, you're failing yourself.
Yeah.
The ACS director, no matter what installation you go to, should be your best friend if you're a leader.
And you know, I would submit to the housing director. We have Jeff Powell here on the team, and because especially for young commanders, you know, and I'm talking about young battery, company battery, troop commanders, this is a great opportunity to really kind of perk up, because part of the command supply discipline is, I don't know, signing for your barracks. And I think, you know, this is one thing we preach often at the First Sergeant Commander course is, and we have a great relationship with the command teams here on post, which I'm really excited about. You know, hey, sign for your stuff, because after 30 days, it's yours anyway, right? Like, you know, so it's probably good to know where your stuff is or where you have gaps, because, I mean, it's okay to have shortages, right? Like, stuff breaks, stuff gets old, you know. People don't treat their stuff as they should. I got it. There's all manner of reasons why. But housing, whether it's lend lease or you know the leasee or leaseer, sorry, the person leasing, or for us is Corvius, or for housing with our team here. Like there's ways to get that fixed. But if you let it run rampant, that's when challenges occur. And I think, but I'll tell you, I think one of the, you know, instead of like dirty houses, I think one of our favorite stories, and I would say is the. It's not really a favorite story. It's sort of tragic. Not tragic that, like, because nobody lost a life, nobody got hurt. But, like, you know, we had a couple house fires recently for different things. And it was really an on post and off post, actually. Yeah. And so it's not, you know, or some things happen where, you know, we're in the plains, right? And so we get these crazy weather events, tornadoes, ice storms, hail damage, severe rain on July 4th. It's not expected. but the community rallies, whether it's the Army Community Service, Army Emergency Relief Funds, Red Cross is huge. You know, and then there's then the FRGs, the Family Readiness Groups, all these folks that really rally around the community. And I think that is huge. And those are the things that you want to see, and those are things that you want to inculcate in your organization, your culture, and just get out ahead of that early, because my word, it can be catastrophic. And then when things that happen that are catastrophic, and there's no support structure, it is challenging and stressful for a family. And I think that, knock on wood, right? Like, we've so far have had a pretty good response, not just from the Fort Sill garrison, but with all the tenant units here and the community writ large outside of Lawton, the greater Lawton area.
Yeah, it was impressive how much clothes and toys,
yeah,
and, you know, cooking, all the stuff that you don't think about when you lose everything that you'll need, how fast the SFRGs and, you know, what Sergeant Major Obermüller and the Otto Murphy Club did for the other family, how fast they gathered everything.
Oh, yeah, the Otto Murphy Club, for sure.
I mean, we're talking huge. Within 48 hours,
yeah,
these people had entire wardrobes and took new toys for the kids and all the things. And it was impressive to see how fast the community came together for both of those families. Yeah, really, all three of those families, because the one house was a duplex, so the other family lost a bunch of stuff, too, just from smoke and water damage.
Yeah, 100%. And we had just had the recent off-post, and the community's rallying, and it's just great to see that, and it just makes you feel good about humanity all over again. Every day you see that, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I got to say, I think, as we look forward to, we talked about the garrison of the future and our vision. I think one of the good things that I thought was really great, sitting down with the directors and really... I think what you and Jim Peed had for the mission and the vision were great. But then as we look at the transformation of the Army, we had to tweak some happy to glad, some little tweaks, and just sitting down with the directors and looking forward with how do we make Fort Sill Garrison installation a choice, right? How do we make this the place that people would like to come to? Because really, let's face it, and we all know Fort Sill, it's in Oklahoma, and it's not super isolated like Fort Irwin, California, the National Training Center.
Like Fort Wainwright.
Yeah. But you're in an area that is, isolated is not the right word, it's kind of in the boonies, right? You know, Lawton's a beautiful city. It's got a lot to offer. Oklahoma City does, Dallas. And I think one of the things we look at is, how do we continue that partnership? How do we look at all the things? And so making this installation choice and, what I'm really grateful for is we've got a really great positive rate for a lot of the comments we get here. It's over 95% annually, and so that means that we're doing things right. But then also, if we look at some of the 5% that good, better, and different, or right, wrong, or indifferent, we take a look at how do we improve ourselves. And that feedback is a gift. And I got to tell you, over the past 4 months, it's been great to see where we're doing really well at, because you always want to, it makes you feel good. But even better, I think, is getting, talking from a guy who's been an OC twice, the National Training Center, right? The recidivism rate is high at the National Training Center, is taking that feedback and making us better. And so for those out there who are part of the ICE Combat world, who read it, who understand it, or who provide input, I want to say thank you a lot, because it really helps us see ourselves to improve and get better every day. And so we see it. I mean, we're not the only ones. Senior commander sees it, sergeant major, the FCO staff, it helps us out. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think people have to not be afraid of feedback. The key is to not take it personal either.
Oh, yeah.
It's okay. Where do we need to improve on?
Yeah.
I mean, and here's the thing with ICE. Some are going to be, you're always going to have that small percentage that just want to get on there and swear at you and think the world is against them.
Mm-hmm.
You're always going to have that 1%. But the other ones, it's if someone's providing feedback of what we need to improve on or what was wrong, or sometimes they might have come across one of our employees that were just having a bad day that day, because we're all human. But we're still in the customer service business in the garrison as a whole.
Mm.
So it's it's okay to see that comment, not take it personal, and be like, okay, this is where we need to improve. Yeah. And where I ask for people that are listening, if you're going to fill out ICE, don't be afraid to leave your information, because sometimes we might have to have a couple follow-on questions to really get at the root of the problem. But if it's just all anonymous, I can't, you or I or the directors can't get that extra information that we need in order to really fix the problem.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you're looking at the, what is it, S6 Ys or 5 Ys, whatever it is, to get to the root of the problem sometimes, and having that follow-up, and no one's out to get someone else. There's no retaliation. It's actually, again, like, big fan of issue, discussion, recommendation. Hey, I've had some where, like, people, I remember how many times we counted the F-bomb on one of them. It's really great. But pulling that apart, there was some quality information there that we were able to pull out. Okay, this is where we may be challenged at. Let's take a look. So, and people are passionate. They write passionately.
And I think it's for people that's okay. To know that, yeah, and with ICE, they only associate ICE with negative comments.
Yeah, but we're lucky. We get
We get a lot of positive ones.
98%.
Sometimes I still preach that to people. You know, if you come across someone who is just being a rock star that day, fill out a nice comment. But hey, you know, I went to the ID card section today, and Teresa Blam was really helpful. You know, throw that in a nice comment.
Yeah,
we have a lot of great people that care about the soldiers and families on this installation that work their butts off every day for us. So it's good, you know, and that's how the Garrison Command team can recognize these people. But hey, now we got positive, you know, 10 positive ICE comments about you.
Yeah.
You know, then we can reward them with different options that we have. So it's important for everyone to know it's not just this person really made me mad today, or, you know, my favorite one was, you know, again, Ethan Briner does a really great Toys for Kids program here during the Christmas time.
Oh, absolutely amazing. And it's coming up. I just signed the paperwork for it, bro. I love it.
I mean, he literally sets up a little shop, and it's based on age groups. And you can come get 3 free gifts per kid. And we have a great spouses club here that wraps the gifts for them.
For sure.
And we had gotten an ICE comment, or someone was complaining that he went there to get gifts for his kids, and we weren't giving away free bikes, and we should have been giving away free bikes. And it's like, okay, there's not a whole lot I'm going to do with that one. I mean, a lot of our gifts are based off of donations. And again, going back to the great community relationship we have, there's a lot of Frontier friends who donate an insane amount of money for Ethan to go out and buy all these gifts for the program.
Yeah, we've got a great donation manager and sponsor program that allows us to do these things for the non-appropriated funds of NAF MWR. Yeah. And so we for sure stay out of that, but we've got a great community that does that. And it's really great that allows us to support soldiers, young or old, with their families, you know, across all ranks. And it's absolutely wonderful. You know, that's a... You know, I kind of, one of the things I liked as we kind of walked into this, we look at vision and our mission and intent and how we're going to do things. And we talked about initiatives as we look at, like, we talk about policy and some of these things we're trying to do. I think one of the things that I thought was really beneficial, and we've got a lot of good positive feedback from our crew in the Garrison, is our health and holistic fitness challenges. And so for those that are out there, we are all over social media with a lot of things. Christine Gardner, Miss Chris Gardner, and the team here at Fort Sill Fire Center of Excellence, as we work collaboratively together.
Now you got it. Good job.
Yeah, said it. Now don't ask me to spell it. spell check that. But I think our health and holistic fitness challenges, and then when we do our team challenges, have been really fun, at least for us. And I think we got a lot of... I mean, the first one we did was a rowing challenge, and it was over a million meters rowed. It was like 900 some odd miles or whatever it was. And
then it was the push-ups was the next one, I think, right?
Yeah, with
the... By the way, Noel.
Noel doing like 10,000 push-ups.
Yeah, I'm never going to
twice.
Yeah, I'm not going to do that.
No, I hit 45 hundo, and I was happy. You know, and then we got the cycle October, and then, we had a step count September. But it goes back to, when we talk about taking care of soldiers, but really taking care of families, taking care of our organization, the health and holistic fitness challenge, physical fitness, these are mental and spiritual fitness, and that sort of three-legged stool, if you will, the three legs of the fitness really comes together. We've had a lot of great feedback, and then we had a lot of great feedback on what people would like to see in the future, and I think that's been really great.
That's great.
Oh, yeah.
Because you and I have the same mindset on the importance of physical fitness when it comes to mental fitness and all the other things. And we've gotten a lot of great feedback of people enjoying it. I mean, some people aren't the push-up people. Some people would rather row. But as long as they're, you know, then we did the step count challenge. As long as people are getting out there and moving, that's all that really matters.
That's it.
And I even got an email, I think it was 2 days ago, where people are asking if they could do whatever numbers we come up with, say for push-ups, we'll say it's 10,000.
Yeah.
If they can do teams of four, then that way they can get esprit de corps going on with their organization.
Yeah.
No, absolutely.
Yeah, we talk about scalability too, right? Because, you know, we have a more seasoned, grizzled veteran population, you know? And then like you and I, we go hard in the paint. So I'm just coming off a broken collarbone and you did something in your little toe or something.
Yeah, I broke my foot again.
Yeah.
Not little toe.
Yeah. Whatever, little toe. You know, some million-dollar wound. Whatever, it's fine.
Just because you got a little boo-boo on your shoulder.
It's a little boo-boo.
For those who don't know, I had to help him put his shirt on.
It's embarrassing, but it's true.
Because he's weak.
But to be fair, I broke it during a triathlon and didn't know I broke it and slapped my chain back on and finished out the race. So tough guys do tough guy things, right? And so.
Oh, he knew he broke it.
No. No, yeah. After I couldn't put my shirt on, I thought it was broken for sure. So, no, it was really good and it was a ton of fun. But I digress as we move out of that. But, you know, it's been fun as we move through the Garrison world and trying to figure out what that looks like, you know, making our way through systems and processes and really looking out as we look up and out. I think because both of us strategically were looking up and out to see where we fit into the grander scheme of where the senior commander wants to go and his vision.
Yeah.
And then MCOM's vision and all the way up and how do we fit in that process and making it better for soldiers here. And so I would like kind of on that theme, like what is your, as I say soldiers and families and in our civilian population. But Sergeant Major, what is your, like if you're new to the Garrison, mm-hmm. As a Sergeant, Command Sergeant Major, Garrison Commander, you know, most have come, probably have never been trained to be a city mayor, city manager, deputy city mayor, city manager, whatever you want to call it, you know. And so what kind of traits do you think that, you know, Command Sergeant Major or, you know, because there are some installations with a lieutenant colonel or colonel, you know, and colonel. So for those folks doing that, what do you think those traits should be and, you know, and why?
Ooh, that's a good question.
It's the only kind I have, bro.
Yeah. So one, you have to be able to thrive in chaos. Because every day in the garrison, you're going to be throwing something new. And there's just so, especially on a larger installation like ours, there's so much stuff going on. One person can't do it all. You know, we got to. The commander, the sergeant major, you got the deputy. I mean, there's just so much going on. One person can't do it all. And the biggest thing I noticed, I wish I could put it in the SMAP and CCAT, is even you and I, who are extroverts 2.0s, for sure.
Tier
even
one,
you
for
and
sure.
I get peopled out.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, AUSA alone... I mean, part of that, too, is because everyone thought you were your brother, so we had to meet double the amount of people.
That was fun, by the way.
which is hilarious.
the reactions. I just want to pull that thread for a minute. The reactions on people's faces was classic.
So for those of you listening that don't know, you know, Colonel Baird has an identical twin brother who is a 3-star level nominative sergeant major, who's also hyper-successful, so everybody knows him. My favorite thing was when people walked up and started talking to you, the level of hurt in their face when you didn't recognize them. Like, but we were together for 4 years. Like, no, you think I'm my brother Tom. Then it was like the relief that they weren't so forgettable.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. No, it was great. And then I think the other part to that is when I was standing next to Joanne, his wife, who is the big shout out to Command Sergeant Major Joanne Nauman as the first USASOC female command sergeant major who's absolutely crushing it right now. It's an amazing leader and really great to see her doing really well. But standing next to her and people coming up, what I wanted to wear was like a sticky note that said,
I'm not Tom. I'm the other bear.
Or really like, I'm not TJ, because that's where he goes by, right? I'm the other one, like, right? You know, so, but it was classic. But anyway.
But to go back to the traits of the you have to, one, thrive in chaos, I think is definitely the most needed trait.
Yeah.
And two, you have to be able to be a people person, because I think the most important thing for a garrison command team and for us to be successful is we have to get out and see everyone. And that's hard to do. So, you know, I have my own way of doing it. You have your own way of doing it.
Yeah.
So, I break it down by days. So, you know, on this day, I'm going to be at 4,700. I'm going to make sure I see these people. You know, and maybe on this day, I'm going to make sure I go see the folks over at, you know, DPW. You know, spread out DES throughout all the directorates. But you have to be able to be a people person, and you have to be able to want to go out and hear problems and not get overwhelmed by that.
Yeah, and you might not solve them all either, but
you can't solve them all immediately.
But people want to be heard.
And that's all it is.
Yeah.
So you have to be able to be that person that can go out every day, meet and greet as many people as possible.
Yeah.
And not only that, but hear their problems.
Yeah, yeah.
Or here are their issues that they need help with. I think that's imperative.
Yeah, you know, when you talk about listening to understand thread, if you will, just like listen to people. But there's listening to people, and then there's my favorite, social media comment battles,
which I do not do.
Yeah, I like to read them sometimes. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, 99% of the time I don't. But if someone starts pulling a thread that I find comical, I may look at it and then like break away because it's taking too much of my time. But, you know, I find it fascinating. There are some really great sites out there that are approved sites, like the U.S. Army Garrison webpage
Fort Sill.
On the gram, Facebook, you name it. I think we need to get up on LinkedIn shortly, footstomp for my team here, you know, and some of these others. But, you know, we always caution people, like, just – if you're getting information about especially the U.S. Army Garrison Fort Sill, it generally is good to get it from the certified, accredited, whatever you want to call it, the approved page.
You know, that's one of my favorite sources. Don't get it from, you know, Fort Sill Wives Unleashed 2.0 or this whatever neighborhood spouse page. Because Tamara and I, she was in one of these pages. I watched three people have a conversation about how they were getting information directly from me, and I had no idea who these people were. I was also called the Garrison Attorney General.
That's my favorite. You are the Garrison Attorney
General. Here's another.
You know what that means? You're like a barracks lawyer on steroids.
Absolutely.
And if you have never seen Command Sergeant Major Bill Pearson, he's a monster. We like to call him the troglodyte.
Or the BFG, the Big Friendly Giant.
That's a nicer way of saying troglodyte.
Pretty much.
Or if anyone knows what it means cave dweller back in the day, like in Roman time.
But another great one, I read an ICE comment. I got to be careful not to give too much information. I don't want to expose anyone. I read an ICE comment, and I saw where this person's address was. I was like, you know what? That's right down the street from our office.
Yeah.
So I called them up. They had a call back. I'm like, hey, I'll be at your house in 5 minutes. And immediately, I heard, not coming in the house, is he? I was like, red flag number one.
Yeah.
So I go there, and they had these complaints about insects of sorts in their house. And they said, well, you can come back in a couple of days. So I came back in a couple of days with some DPW folks. And they said, oh, you can't come in because of some stuff. Then I came back with DPW, and the Oklahoma expert on this particular insect. And finally, the spouse came out and said, all right, listen. My husband's at work all day. It's just me at home with the kid. So I make stuff up on Facebook and ICE to cause drama because that's how I get my social interaction during the day.
Entertainment.
There's actually nothing wrong.
It's like Hulu, but not, right? Yeah. It's entertainment.
But they had easily six senior spouses on this, you know, lighting their torches and getting the pitchforks just to come try to solve this problem. Come to find out, this is just how this particular person...
Going after Frankenstein's monster, right?
That's just how they got their social interaction during the day, was just stirring the pot
I love it.
on Facebook and stuff. So that's why I tell people all the time at all of our briefs, our new government, please get your information from our personal, you know, the Garrison page or the Fort Sill community page. I'm like, I promise you, when stuff's happening, Chris is getting information out there, accurate information, as soon as we get it.
Yeah, in a timely manner.
It's no one's talking to the Garrison Attorney General, who doesn't exist.
But I'm talking to the Garrison Attorney General, apparently.
Yes, that's between us. But yeah, I've watched people have a long conversation about how they're getting information directly from me, and I had no idea who they were.
Oh my gracious.
And it happens all the time.
That's great. I love it. I think, I think for all the, you know, the commanders out there, having patience is a big one. It takes an ocean to turn a barge, and you can just think of I know we're in the Army, we've got like a little Navy euphemism here, you know, a little water euphemism, but, you know, updating policy and processes in a brigade or a battalion and below, a brigade and below, you know, in some green suitor side can be easier. It may not be the right word, but you can do it in a more rapid manner, you know, whatever yeah. rapid looks like, right? But you really got to be patient, because some of the things you got to look at here, I mean, there's a lot of moving parts, a lot of widgets to realign or synchronize and coordinate, and there's a lot of other things you got to deal with.
A lot of legalese.
Union as well. And I got some good union folks here. And as you work through all these different processes, it's nothing is impossible. It's just you just got to have patience to take time. And then you want to make decisions. So there's the other thing is you can't slow roll decisions. You got to make sure they're timely. And if you don't know, ask the question. Like, you know, we do that all the time, right, wrong, or indifferent. You know, I got to figure out what that looks like. And then understand where priorities are and who's doing them, right? You know, so one of the things we look at is where's our authorities matrix? Who has the ability to do what? Because if I'm not around, you're not around. Julia, Sabia, our deputy garrison commander, like, you know, who does what when? And understand how you manage your energy. And it's really for any commander out there, because, you know, we can run roughshod over organizations, and we're garrisons like anything else. Like, the resources are, we're in a resource challenged environment right now, and so we've got to make the most. So we've got to do what we can, what we have, and that's a pretty good challenge to have, because I think through that is innovation, and you can really look at AI. Like, we're getting heavy into Power BI.
Yeah.
ChatGPT or what do you call it? Camo GPT, yeah. You know, and so we're looking at the garrison of the future. That's innovation. You want to take things off the plate, use these things, like, think outside. And if you're an old fuddy-duddy like we are, but you don't want to integrate all this new stuff, find a new organization to be in, because you're slow rolling your organization, yeah. And it's important.
I think another thing important for garrison commanders, I think, you know, all of them are prior battalion commanders.
Mm-hmm.
So you folks are used to making a decision, and it's going to happen that day or that week.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm making a commission. Being a garrison commander, you're making decisions that are going to affect 10 years from now.
Yeah, the garrison of the future, right?
Yeah. So I think that's a little bit of a change for the garrison commander. Like, even as a sergeant major, I'm still dealing with day-to-day stuff.
But you're looking way out.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to barracks and stuff, I'm still thinking about 2035.
Yeah, policy and process, culture, same thing.
I think that's the biggest shock for garrison commanders, is realizing that the decisions you're making today are for 10 years from now.
Yeah.
Talking about contracting and building these buildings, you know.
Yeah, like barracks. We're gonna open up a new set of barracks that somebody 5 years ago decided to budget. You know, put in the facilities investment plan, right? And then we're talking energy and water. Insulation, energy, and water plan, and energy resilience and cyber resilience. And that's one of the big things that. You know, for us, we're a big training platform, obviously, but we also do a power projection with two Force Com Brigade units here, 75th Field Artillery Brigade and the 31st Air Defense Brigade. But then we also, there's a potential we power project if the balloon goes up, you know, Compo 2, Compo 3, right? And so what happens when there's a huge storm, power goes out, and we got to do these things still?
Which is inevitable.
Which happens, it seems like, once a quarter here, right? Or, you know, the balloon goes up and some nefarious actor hits a button somewhere and all of a sudden electricity or water goes out. You know, mm-hmm. you know, you see that across the globe. So how do we train and do power projection? Well, our big thing is looking at a minimum of 14 days in, you know, normal business, yeah. 30 days plus if we have to do this in, you know, conflict or and whatnot. And so what does that look like in that continuum when we do competition or conflict, right? And mm-hmm. so, you know, competition, crisis, conflict kind of thing. So how do we do that? And I think we've got a really good way ahead right now with some partnership stuff that we're doing. We're looking at yeah. renewable energies. It's not just the government, by the way. Corvius is really, I think one of my most favorite days recently is when Corvius like, we can do these things. And they raise their hand to help.
Yeah.
We talked with MCOM. We had, you know, and then there's all the external outstations all the way up to, you know, out to the Hill and some of those other places that are, you know, we're not paying for energy. We're paying for energy resilience.
Yeah.
And really independence, really, because we've got to do our jobs when there's no power, when there's no water, when there's mm-hmm. no XYZ. And so we really got to look out to be innovative, to look out to the garrison of the future, to look out the quality of life, to integrate new technologies with resources we don't have. But when you innovate and you use the resources that are available, we quickly find out that some of the things that we thought we couldn't do, we probably can. Again, it's different mm-hmm. processes, different policies. It mm-hmm. may not be what it looks like now, but the future is where we're at. And I really appreciate sitting down on the whiteboards with our team and kind of figuring out how we look to the future to make and doing the things now to get us there that will help 10, 20, 30 years from now. We're not.
Yeah.
We're going to be serious old fuddy. We're going to be the old grizzled veterans sitting on the porch going, back in my day.
I'll have the hat with my ERB on it, you know.
Oh my God. The DD214 on your windshield.
But yeah, and again, it's those are processes that new commanders have to realize. You're assigning just the process alone to get something approved. That could take a year.
Oh, yeah. We're going through that for a couple things right now. Yeah, with that, yeah. You know,
some of the hunting regulation stuff and some of these processes have to go all the way up the Department of the Army and come all the way back down.
Drone policy for FAA policy as we try to influence some things.
And that is not a one-week turnaround on these things.
It is not. And you got to get buy-in from multiple different organizations, and you got to figure this out. But it's been a pleasant experience so far, and really excited to continue this mission over the next roughly year and a half or so, and you know, and see where it takes us. And again, for those that are out there, then you're going to get notified to be a garrison commander. You're about to be a garrison commander, or you are, and you're as new as I am, and with a phenomenal partner here and a great command sergeant major. Like, continue to strive forward with it. It's mm-hmm. a blessing. It is an absolute blessing to continue to serve. It's an absolute blessing to continue to be a commander. It's an absolute blessing to work with not only our green suiters or our joint partners, because we got MARDET here, we got the Marine Detachment, we've got Air Force folks. Mm-hmm. We got a lot of folks that come through our veteran community, our civilian population, obviously, because we got 97%-ish that are non active duty, or, you know, they're all civilians and or former DOD. It's been really great. And so as we close this out, I'll leave you with a final thought for the team, and then I'll jump in right there at the end.
Final thought for the team, just to hit the Sergeant Major trifecta, as I call it. You're not an old school Sergeant Major unless you caveat, you piggyback, and then you got to behoove everyone to do something.
Don't forget belabor.
again, same thing with the Sergeant Majors. Understand that if you're coming into the position, like we just had a Sergeant Major here on the installation, Sergeant Major Jimmy Diaz, who just got selected for a garrison down at White Sands, is to realize that now you have an opportunity to affect soldiers and their families at such a greater scale. It's actually a phenomenal job to get selected for. And higher issues, I mean, people worry about the career thing that we talk about. I think that's a way of the past. I mean, just off this last list, just off the top of my head, I remember there had to have been 5 garrison sergeant majors that were selected for the nominative pool. So more senior officers are realizing that once you learn how installations run, the different colors of money, it's a great asset to have in your repertoire.
And yeah.
Don't be upset about the job. Don't be afraid of the job. You now can affect soldiers and families at a much greater scale, and it's far more rewarding.
No, I agree. And like you kind of to caveat, you know,
yeah, slap that behoove,
the behoove, and to belabor, to what's the other one, to follow? Was it the anyway, I'm gonna pull this thread here in a minute as I flubber above it. But so the strategic thought process that you have to go through to really think out and not just the strategic thought process, but the daily business. So you're up and out and then down and in, up and out, down and in, up and out, down and in, and you got to figure out what those priorities are. And so as I close this out, I want to say thanks for everybody for listening. Sergeant Major Bill Pearson and I are looking to come up with a really great name. So if you got a great suggestion, let us know. We think we have one, but we're not sure yet. But ChatGPT might be my friend this weekend as we figure this out. So we're looking for a great podcast name. But if you're interested out there and you want to be part of the podcast, and we're going to do this once a month. Forget the next one, but we're going to go around and see some of our folks here on the installation, and then we'll bring some folks in, talk leadership, especially the Lawton Fort Sill or the Lawton community and what we do there. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be a really great opportunity for us to really kind of sell the brand. That's one of our things. Like, how do we sell the community? How do we make this installation a choice? How do we help others that are having similar challenges, whether it's in a garrison or at a any other command level or any other directorate? You know, kind of really like see themselves, see how they can get better, help us with our feedback to get better as a garrison, and help us better prioritize and nest with our senior commander and installation management command and higher order math. So thank you all for listening. It's been a really great opportunity to sit here with Sergeant Major Bill Beast Mode Pearson. Dude's a monster. So thanks a lot, y'all. And we'll see you on the high ground.